All right, welcome back everyone to the deep dive. We're diving into a case today that might seem a little, well, dry on the surface, but trust me, this one is a real gem when it comes to unpacking some big legal and ethical questions. We're looking at Landy v. Arcolese, an Arizona case from back in 1992. And I think this one, especially for anyone, knee-deep in law school or thinking about a legal career, this is going to highlight some really, really important things to keep in mind about how contracts work and where the courts draw the line when it comes to ethical boundaries.
Yeah, I mean, Landy v. Arcolese, it's not just about, a broken promise or something like that. It really goes to the heart of when a contract is just so fundamentally flawed, so problematic that the courts just won't enforce it. And that's what makes it, like you said, a real gem for anyone learning about the law.
So paint the picture for us. Who are the players in this legal drama?
Okay, so we start with Dale Landy. He's our main character in a way. And Landy gets contacted by this company, Moorhead and Associates. Now, what Moorhead and Associates does is they're kind of like, I don't know, air hunters is a good way to put it. They track down people who might be in line for an inheritance they don't even know about. So they reach out to Landy and say, "Hey, we think you might have some unclaimed moolah out there, and we can help you get it." Sounds pretty good so far, right?
Sure. I mean, who wouldn't want to find out they're suddenly entitled to a chunk of change? But I'm guessing there's a catch. There's always a catch.
Right, there's always a catch. And the catch here is their fee. They wanted a whopping 40% of whatever Landy ended up inheriting. That's a pretty hefty chunk.
Oof, yeah. That's a big bite. Okay, but it gets even more complicated, right? Because it's not just about the money. There's another layer to this agreement that really throws things into a legal and ethical gray area.
Exactly. So, as part of the deal, Moorhead and Associates say, "Look, we'll not only find this inheritance for you, but we'll also hook you up with our guy, attorney Bernard Arcolese, to handle all the legal stuff. He'll represent you, make sure everything goes smoothly."
So they're not just offering to find the money, they're essentially packaging in their preferred lawyer as part of the
Right,
service.
a built-in legal representative. So Landy, he agrees, signs the agreement, and they set things in motion.
But then Landy, he gets cold feet, starts to have second thoughts.
He does. Maybe starts thinking that 40% is a little too steep, maybe has some concerns about this lawyer he's been kind of assigned. So he decides, "You know what? I'm going to hire my own lawyer." So he gets independent legal advice, takes a good look at this agreement, and decides, "Nope, this just doesn't sit right with me." He declares the whole thing void, says it's not a valid contract, and then, to really shake things up, he sues Moorhead and Associates and Arcolese.
Whoa, so he flips the script completely, goes from potential heir to plaintiff. Bold move.
It is. And this is where it gets really interesting. The trial court, they hear the case and they side with Landy. They basically say, "Yeah, this agreement is not enforceable. It's got some serious problems."
So round one goes to Landy, but I'm guessing Moorhead and Associates and Arcolese weren't ready to throw in the towel just yet.
Not at all. They appealed the decision. So now it goes up to the appellate court. And the appellate court, they have to really dig into the legal nitty-gritty, examine all the arguments, and decide if the trial court got it right.
Okay, so this is where the case really gets juicy for us law nerds. What were the specific legal issues that the appellate court had to wrestle with?
Well, they basically had to look at three big questions. First, was that 40% fee even legal in Arizona for this type of service? Remember, Arizona has that law that puts a 30% cap on what air finding companies can charge. So that was problem number one right off the bat.
Right, so already exceeding a clear statutory limit, what was the second hurdle?
The second big issue was whether Moorhead and Associates were actually acting as unlicensed private investigators. You see, Arizona, like many states, requires private investigators to be licensed, to protect people from potential scams or shady practices. And the court had to figure out if what Moorhead and Associates were doing, digging around for info and tracking down heirs, fell under the definition of private investigation under Arizona law.
Makes sense. You don't want just anyone snooping around people's lives and financial details without some accountability. And then the third issue, the one that I think really cuts to the heart of legal ethics, was whether this whole agreement was essentially a sneaky way to drum up business for attorney Arcolese. Was it illegal solicitation of legal services?
Exactly. It all boils down to whether this arrangement crossed a line. Was it a legitimate referral, or was it more like, as the court put it, commercial exploitation of the legal profession?
Yeah, that phrase commercial exploitation, it just sends shivers down my spine. It suggests that something pretty ethically murky was going on. So, what did the appellate court ultimately decide? Did they uphold the trial court's ruling?
They did. They sided completely with Lambie. They said, this entire agreement is unenforceable. It was a total victory for Lambie, and the court's reasoning is really important.
Okay, so let's break down their reasoning point by point. First, that 40% fee. Did they give Moorhead & Associates any wiggle room there, or was it a strict interpretation of the law?
Nope, no wiggle room at all. They were very clear. Arizona law says you cannot charge more than 30% for these services. The contract said 40%. Game over. Contract violated the law, plain and simple.
Straightforward. No room for interpretation on that one. Now, what about the private investigator issue? Did the court think Moorhead & Associates were walking and quacking like a duck in that regard?
They basically said, yeah, you look like a PI, you act like a PI, you're charging fees for PI-like services, so yeah, you need a license. They were pretty clear that those licensing regulations are there for a reason, to protect the public. They said that the work Moorhead & Associates were doing absolutely fit the legal definition of private investigation as spelled out in Arizona law.
So not only was the fee excessive, but they weren't even legally allowed to be doing what they were doing in the first place. Double whammy. But let's get to the real meat of the issue here, the potential for illegal solicitation of legal services. What exactly did the court find so problematic about this whole attorney referral setup?
Right. This was the big one. And remember, this is where it goes beyond just like a technicality in the law. It gets into the ethical core of what it means to be a lawyer and how the legal system needs to function. So the court really zoomed in on that part of the contract where Moorhead & Associates were required to bring in Bernard Arkeles as the lawyer. They didn't see this as just a friendly suggestion. They saw it as a built-in referral system designed to funnel clients to a specific lawyer.
It sounds like they were basically saying Moorhead & Associates were acting as middlemen, profiting from connecting clients with a lawyer. But why was that so concerning to the court?
The court was worried about this creating a conflict of interest. I mean, think about it. Moorhead & Associates, they get their 40% cut regardless of what happens.
Yeah.
Right? So their interest is just in getting this inheritance settled as quickly as possible, maybe not rocking the boat too much. But the lawyer, their ethical obligation is to act in the best interest of their client, even if that means, you know, pushing back, negotiating harder, maybe even going to trial. So the court saw this prearranged lawyer situation as something that could really compromise a lawyer's ability to be a true advocate for their client.
So in a nutshell, they're saying it sets up a scenario where the profit motive of the air-finding company might not align with the client's best interests, and the lawyer might get caught in the middle.
Exactly. And you can see why the court labeled this commercial exploitation of the legal profession. It's this idea that you're taking something that should be about protecting people's rights, helping them navigate a complex legal system, and you're turning it into just another transaction, just another way to make a buck. And that really undermines public trust in the legal system.
Makes total sense. People need to be confident that their lawyer is on their side, not beholden to some third party who's getting a cut of the action. But there's another interesting legal concept that comes up in this case, quantum meruit. What's that all about?
Right, so quantum meruit is this legal idea that even if a contract isn't valid, if someone has provided services that benefited another person, they should still be paid a reasonable amount for those services. So in this case, Moorhead & Associates could argue, hey, even if the contract was bad, we still did the work of finding Lambie's inheritance. We deserve to get paid something.
Seems kind of fair on the surface, but did the court buy that argument?
Not one bit. They shut it down hard. They were very clear. You can't profit from breaking the law. They said that allowing payment in this kind of situation, even under quantum meruit, would basically be like giving a green light to people to enter into shady agreements, knowing they could still get some money out of it, even if the court found the contract was illegal. That would defeat the whole purpose of having laws and ethical standards.
It's like they're saying, we're not going to create a system where crime pays, even a little bit. So that's a pretty powerful statement. Now, what about the choice of law aspect of this case? What if the contract had said that the laws of some other state, one that maybe didn't have these restrictions on air finder fees or PI licensing, should apply? Could they have gotten around Arizona law that way?
Clever idea. But the court considered that too. They applied something called the most significant relationship test. Basically, they said, even if a contract tries to point to another state's laws, if the heart of the matter, the core activities, happen in Arizona, then Arizona's public policy interests are going to outweigh whatever the contract says. And in this case, the air search started in Arizona. The estate was in Arizona. Presumably, Lambie lived in Arizona. So they said, nope, Arizona law applies. End of story.
So you can't just shop around for a state with more lax rules and try to dodge a state's public policy concerns.
Right, especially when it comes to something as fundamental as protecting people from exploitation or maintaining the integrity of a profession.
So, big picture, what are the key lessons that we can draw from Landy v. Arcalese? What should our listeners, particularly those aspiring legal eagles, really take away from this case?
Well, first off, it's a giant flashing neon sign saying, know your statutory limits. If you're dealing with fees for certain services, especially in regulated areas, understand what the law says and stay within those boundaries. Second, licensing requirements are not just bureaucratic hoops to jump through. They exist to protect the public, and the courts are going to take them very seriously. And finally, it's a powerful reminder that the legal system sees the practice of law as more than just a business. It's a profession with ethical obligations that need to be upheld.
And those obligations sometimes trump the black and white terms of a contract, especially if the court thinks that contract is undermining the core values of the legal system.
Absolutely. The courts are not just going to blindly enforce any agreement people come up with. They're going to look at the bigger picture, the ethical implications, the potential for harm. And if the agreement crosses certain lines, they're going to say, no dice.
Right. Freedom of contract is important, but it's not absolute. And that's a crucial lesson to learn early on in your legal career. So, to wrap things up, let's get our listeners really thinking. What if Moorhead & Associates had been squeaky clean? What if they had their PI license? What if they charged exactly 30%, right at the legal limit? Would the agreement still have been considered invalid just because of that attorney referral piece?
Ah, that's a good one. That's where things get really nuanced. But if I had to bet, I'd say the court would still likely find the agreement unenforceable. I mean, they went out of their way to condemn that referral aspect, calling it commercial exploitation. To them, that arrangement itself posed a threat to the integrity of the legal profession, regardless of whether all the other technical boxes were checked.
So ultimately, it's not just about dotting your I's and crossing your T's. It's about understanding the deeper ethical principles at play, the public policy concerns, and making sure your actions align with those broader values.
Could not have said it better myself.
Well, this has been a fantastic deep dive into a really, really interesting case. Thanks for breaking it down with us.
Anytime. Always a pleasure to explore these legal puzzles.
And for our listeners, if you're ever in doubt, remember Landy v. Arcalese. Know your limits, get your licenses, and keep it ethical out there. Till next time, happy lawyering.
See you next time.